from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As we push into 2020, many people are still wondering if they should make some kind of New Year's resolution. This week on Register Radio, we talked to Patrick Riley, head of the Cardinal Newman Society, about three resolutions you ought to make that will benefit not only you and your family, but the whole church. And then, what were the best movies of 2019? We get a Catholic perspective on last year's films with Register film critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, I have to admit, I haven't made any resolutions, and so I'm one of those people who are looking for a resolution. So this is a perfectly timed segment of Register Radio.
Agreed. And for those of us who are contemplating resolutions for sort of self-improvement, I realize my list would be so long that it's just too daunting.
Maybe that's what's stopping me. But Patrick Riley had some great ideas that he put forward in a blog for the Register. And all of his resolutions, not surprising, had to do with education. Patrick joins us now. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you, Jeanette.
So, Patrick, while I really do want to jump into some kind of resolution I can commit to for this year, I'd love to talk first about another blog that you wrote for the Register, which is very timely, and it had to do with Nick Sandman. And this is a young man who last year at the March for Life was basically bullied by activists, and who the whole world, at least the world in the U.S. media, seemed to jump on. And he won a victory against CNN, who he sued for, I guess it was defamation. But you're calling this a victory not only for Nick, but for all of us. Why?
Well, absolutely. The libel laws exist to protect the average person from the great power that the media has. I mean, the media has the power to do such good as the Register does, as EWTN does. But as you know, as a journalist, you have to be very, very careful to get the mm-hmm. facts right. Even the slightest error can really cause serious damage, especially to the average person who suddenly becomes a celebrity because of what's written about them. And this was just a tragic situation. You know, I'll tell you, I was one of the early people I saw on Twitter the video segment that was going around of Nick Sandman standing in front of the Native American activist and looking rather smug, with a smile on his face. And it didn't look good. And, my first reaction was, this is not great for Catholic schools, that this group of Catholic schoolboys look like, at least from the way the segment was portrayed, it looked like they were taunting this lone Native American person. And in fact, it was quite the opposite. I don't want to say that he was taunting them, but he sure got right up into Nick Sandman's face. And the way Nick, this young boy just stood there in front of him, not flinching, not giving any ground, but simply, just trying to smile, trying to remain calm, and not to get into any kind of battle or physical confrontation or even a verbal confrontation, I think was highly admirable in hindsight, now that we look at this. So I think he was a hero, and but he got hurt. His family got hurt. His school got hurt. There were a lot of people, including Catholics, who were highly critical of him, according to what it looked like. And what it was just a rush to judgment. And it's possible for all of us to do that, especially in the world of social media. So the reason why this is a victory is because, Nick Sandman, CNN, some of these other publications, news outlets, did not correct the story the way that they should have. They did not go back and amend for the damage that was done to this young man and his family, and in fact, to Catholics and pro-lifers and MAGA-wearing hat people and everybody who simply, we all have a right to speak our opinion and to do it in a proper way. So I think this was a great victory that basically what happened is CNN settled his lawsuit. I've seen reports that it was $250 million, but that's all unpublished, unverified.
Right.
The point is, he got his point across to them, and now Washington Post and some others are going to have to eventually, I think, eat crow as well.
I guess it's safe to say his college is going to be paid for.
Right.
I sure hope so. Yeah, and I can give him some recommendations where to go.
I was just going to say that. Exactly. So Patrick Riley's blog is Justice for Nick Sandman and All of Us at ncregister.com. And Patrick, you know, one of the things I loved about reading your blog there is that it made me think not only about institutions. You know, I mean, you could say that this is a sort of epic battle between left or right, or, you know, political parties or whatever. And often when we talk about schools with you, even, we're talking about institutions, you know, Catholic universities or schools. But this is a student, and you made that point very clear, that this is a young man whose life was very adversely impacted by this situation, and because of it was politicized. He was made a political symbol, and they wanted to teach him a lesson or whatever. And so I loved that you made us think about the student, and that's really an important element all of us need to be thinking about, and it's my segue into the resolutions. So you wrote an article about New Year's resolutions, another blog at ncregister.com, resolved for New Year 2020, Teach the Faith. And this is all about three ways we can teach the faith. Can you summarize those resolutions that you offer us?
Yeah, well, as you said earlier, they all come under the theme of education. And I think, you know, we typically, when the minute someone says the word education, we immediately think of schools, brick and mortar schools, maybe colleges, institutions. You know, the task of education is so much bigger, right? It's something that applies to every one of us. It's an obligation that we teach. It's exactly what Christ instructed us to do, to go and teach the nations. And it's you know, part of the spiritual works of mercy, right? You know, I made the point that three of the spiritual works of mercy, instructing the ignorant, counseling the sorrowful, and admonishing the sinner, all have an educational aspect to it. But it's also something that education is something that we need to receive also. It's part of our calling as human beings to learn and to appreciate more and more of God. It's part of our worship of Him. And so this is all extremely important, but with the resolutions, you know, I particularly pointed out the crisis with regard to the Eucharist that we saw in the past year, where we've seen both the EWTN poll and the Pew Research polls that showed, you know, woeful understanding of the Eucharist and appreciation for the real presence. And so there's a real crisis that needs to be addressed, and we could all resolve to do our part to teach those who are ignorant about the Eucharist. And then another aspect of that is chastity. You know, I think we're facing this crisis of sexuality, of gender, of all these misunderstandings. But the way I look at it is we are nearing that final ridiculous point that the whole sexual revolution was leading us toward. Right. So in one sense, I think we're near the end of this craziness. It's an extremely crazy point and frankly, very dangerous moment. But on the other hand, it's also a great opportunity for us to go out there and teach again about chastity, about respect for the body, about human anthropology. And if we take that opportunity, I do think we can see a real change happening within our culture, and perhaps a new dawn of rationality in our country.
That's right. I mean, there's almost a weariness of all that is going on that pushes us towards something more sane, and that's the truth, honestly. And that's how you end your piece, is talking about the need to form Catholics in truth. And really, this is a segment about resolutions, so I don't want to harp on the year that we had or the decade that we had, but really, we have seen a lot of failure of evangelization and education, Catholic education especially, with too many people going through Catholic schools or Catholic programs at the parish that have not adequately formed them in belief and in withstanding the onslaught of secularism in our culture. And
right.
So now is the time. We have to seize this moment of weariness with it all to actually teach the truth.
Right. And these are big concepts that we're talking about, you know, the Eucharist, truth, chastity. But there are very practical ways that we can work both to improve ourselves and our ability to talk about these issues, and then to go out there and to reach out to a particular segment. You know, become a CCD teacher and reach the young people who really need a message that they're not getting in the public schools. You know, get involved with a scouting program or with another youth program to bring that to young people. Get involved in a Catholic prayer group or another opportunity to bring the message of Christ and our faith and the truth to other adults. I mean, there are plenty of opportunities, and just picking one or two of those in 2020, I think, could help us make a real difference.
And I'd like to bring up something that your organization, the Cardinal Newman Society, does that can really help people who are especially involved in their parish or their school who, you know, we're facing this problem of Catholic identity. We're facing the problem of being pushed into this gender theory war, if you will. And so you offer things that can help us navigate those sticky areas, the hiring practices and policies that you offer. Can you share a little bit with me about what you would offer those of us who are involved in our Catholic schools?
Well, for educators, you know, we're doing a lot of work in looking at policies and developing standards and guidance for, you know, what ought to be done in any Catholic institution. And for Catholic families everywhere, you know, we have to remember that education of young people, of our sons and daughters, is the primary obligation of parents. And so this form of evangelization is essential. And if they're not getting it from the schools that they're in, we need to find different schools, or we need to find ways to supplement the education that they're getting. It's extremely important.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick Riley of the Cardinal Newman Society, thank you for joining us on Register Radio. We'll be talking in just a moment to Deacon Stephen Graydonis about 2019's best films. More when we return.
Don't miss a moment of 2020. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Stay connected and follow the latest from Washington, D.C., the 2020 elections, along with events from the Vatican and the world. Only the National Catholic Register brings you in-depth news and analysis from a Catholic perspective. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. Don't miss a minute of 2020. Call or click today. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, the movie award season has begun. The Golden Globe Awards were last weekend, and as usual, this sort of liberal evangelization was taking place during those.
So, there's no self-celebration quite like Hollywood can do.
No, exactly. But thankfully, we have our own way of looking at movies of this year, and we have with us now Deacon Stephen Graydonis, the Register's film critic, who knows a good movie when he sees one, and he also knows a bad one. He'll help us decipher. Welcome, Deacon Stephen.
Jeanette, it's good to be here.
So, as you know, I have not really watched many movies this year. We've been talking about that every time we talk. I do sometimes read a lot. So I've been noticing as reviewers have reviewed the movies of this year, a few of them have said, oh, enough with the sequels. Deacon, you have said, though, that this has been a fantastic year for film. Why so?
Well, it's certainly true when you look at the movies that are making the most money. When you look at the top 10, you're going to see a lot of sequels, a lot of remakes, a lot of franchise films, and a lot of Disney in particular. Disney has really patented this for Hollywood, and they own 7 of the top 10 films at the domestic box office in 2019. But 2019 was also an excellent movie year in a number of different respects, not every respect. But among other things, there were an unusual number of notable films in 2019 that dealt with religious themes, including two of my top 3 films of the year, movies that explored religious and spiritual and moral themes in sometimes interesting and challenging ways. There were a number of films that went back to classic Hollywood genres, but reinvented them from the perspective of the filmmakers who are working them now. And some of those are among the year's best films. And just overall, I had a harder time excluding movies from my top 10 list than I've had in recent years. I would say the quality of the films in my top films list overall is probably the highest that it's been all decade. The one really unfortunate caveat is there were no really outstanding family films.
Oh. Yeah, and why is that, do you think?
Well, partly it's just because Disney Pixar has been pushing the sequels and remakes all year. I mean, Avengers Endgame, The Lion King, Frozen 2, Toy Story 4, Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, on and on. Next year, I'm really looking forward to Pixar's Soul. This is the latest from Pete Docter, who is an outspoken Christian and the head. He's the creative chief at Disney Animation. He's also the genius responsible for Inside Out and Up, among others. So I think we were just between a lot of original releases. And then, you know, nobody just came out with an out-of-left-field masterpiece like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. A lot of mediocre films, surprisingly 3 different animated films about Bigfoot or Sasquatch. There was Missing Link, Abominable, and Littlefoot, and none of them was anything to write home about. So it just didn't work out for family audiences this year.
Well, you mentioned that you have these high-profile films, but the ones that really caught your eye were these the reinventions of classic Hollywood genres. The two that I wanted to ask you about, 1917, but also
yes.
They Shall Not Grow Old. What is it about World War I that suddenly we have rediscovered it?
Well, you know, this is one of those things that just sometimes happens, these convergences. You often see 2 films on a given theme in any given year. The 3 Bigfoot things was a little heavy-handed, so to speak. But, you know, 1917 is the war that Hollywood has really mostly neglected over the years. It's because there's no big moment of triumph. There's no defeating the bad guys in quite the same way in World War I. But Sam Mendes apparently had a grandfather who was a soldier in World War I and who told stories. And this is based on one of them. And what he's done to make it a little different and interesting is he's gone to one of the filmmakers' tricks that everybody likes to talk about and think about. You see very few people actually doing it. The conceit of shooting an entire movie in one continuous shot, or what seems to be one continuous shot, it's actually a bunch of long shots digitally stitched together to look as if there's no editing, which makes it kind of an anti-Saving Private Ryan. Private Ryan used highly fragmented editing to convey the chaos of war. Here, I think the effect is to convey the inescapability of war, the fact that you just have to keep suffering through it and slogging through it and putting one foot in front of the other. And that's really what came across to me.
Well, so this would be similar to what, like Hitchcock's Rope?
Yes, exactly. The same kind of thing where there are edits, but they're hidden. Hitchcock hid half of his edits. Here they're all hidden. It seems to be one continuous shot except for when the protagonist is knocked unconscious for a while.
Right. The other one that I know you were very high on, the two, The Irishman and Knives Out.
Yes. Also in this, 1917 is an invention of a classic war film. The Irishman is like it's a traditional Scorsese film for the first 2.5 hours. You might be watching, you know, Casino or Goodfellas. It stars Robert De Niro as a mob hitman and Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa. But then in the last like 45 minutes, it pushes into this overtime fourth act. That in which Scorsese really cross-examines the entire genre. It ends with an echo of the most famous ending of the most famous gangster movie of all time, the last shot of Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather, in which the door to Michael Corleone's office closes on the face of his wife Kay, and she realizes that she's shut out. Here you have a door which is left ajar, and the significance of that in the light of what we've seen over the past 3.5 hours is absolutely tremendous. He really explores not only the moral but the spiritual hollowness of the life that his protagonist has lived. One of the last shots shows him trying to confess to a priest, but there's just nothing. There's nothing in him. He has no soul, no substance. It's almost like an anti-Man for All Seasons. It's really very chilling.
So, Deacon Stephen, I always go to your list when I'm looking for a movie. And so the Register has just published your list for 2019 of your top movies. And, I want people to read it. But I also think it's nice to tease a little bit. What was your favorite film of 2019?
My favorite film of 2019 is a film I feel as if I've been waiting for more than half of my career as a film critic. Since I saw Terrence Malick's The New World, and I thought, this guy has an amazing style and he has a deep engagement with meaningful themes. If he ever makes a movie about a subject that I care deeply about, I'm going to go nuts over it. And he has. A Hidden Life is the story of the life and death of Blessed Franz Jägerstätter. He was an Austrian Catholic, devout Catholic, and a martyr under the Nazi regime in 1943. He was executed for refusing the soldier's oath of allegiance to Adolf Hitler. He was canonized and beatified. He was beatified and declared a martyr, by Pope Benedict in 2007, who knew his village as a child. You know, he's got kind of personal connection to him. And Malick brings his passion for the themes of theodicy, of evil in the world and the goodness of God, and of Paradise Lost to this man's life and death in a way that I've never seen him do before. It's almost like this is the film that he's been building up to making for his entire career. It's his most overtly religious film, where he really brings his Christian faith to the fore. Malick is a Christian. It's his most political film. And for me, it's really the film of the year and possibly of the decade.
Well, I look forward to seeing that one. But I should also note that your review of the films of this year also highlight some other documentaries. I mean, that's not the only one that's really based on the life of someone who lived. There were 3 or 4 documentary films that you also noted.
I think I've got like half a dozen documentaries on my list, or maybe even more. But
was there that many? Wow.
Well, 3 of them are on the top 10 that really stand out. And they're all in this kind of category of documentary that I call a time machine. Because in all of them, there's nothing contemporary that's been added. The filmmakers go back to existing materials, in many cases that we've never seen, like with Apollo 11, where there was these newly rediscovered high-definition NASA film reels. In the case of Amazing Grace, there was this concert video footage from Aretha Franklin's gospel music concert in 1972, where she recorded her album Amazing Grace. And then Peter Jackson went back to this archival World War I documentary in They Shall Not Grow Old and just used this incredible restoration technology. He lets you watch the the first 25 minutes of the movie watching the film elements in their natural state, so that when it transitions to suddenly being restored and colorized and you're hearing the words of the soldiers brought to life through lip readers and voice actors, and all throughout, the only voiceovers are archival recordings of the soldiers telling you about their real experiences. All of these films, They Shall Not Grow Old, World War One, Apollo 11, and then An Amazing Grace, are so overwhelming and miraculous and flawless that, you know, I could have called it a three-way tie for my favorite film of the year. If there hadn't been A Hidden Life.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing.
It's really good to hear. This makes me excited to actually go and watch some films, because I have to say, sometimes we get through this segment of this annual review of films, and it's pretty depressing. But this leaves me with some hope for finding some really good films that my husband and I can both sit down and watch and enjoy. I want everyone to go to ncregister.com and check out SDG's top films of 2019. Stephen, thanks so much for what you do. I invite our listeners to also go to decentfilms.com, and there you can see short video clips of Deacon Stephen Gradonis reviewing films.
I misspoke. I said I had three in my top ten. It's actually four. I forgot
four.
About One Child Nation, which is my number two. Four documentaries in the top ten alone.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's a good list. I appreciate the that summary that you gave me, because that's sort of my short list that I can.
I know what you mean about it being depressing sometimes. I struggle, and I really look hard for the more uplifting films. It was a little easier this year with Greta Gerwig's Little Women, Rian Johnson's Knives Out. And then when it came to those three films, you know, as I wrote in my piece, the only reason that They Shall Not Grow Old wound up in seven and Apollo 11 was six, and then Amazing Grace was number three, was I went by the subject matter. I thought, well, they're all perfect, but I would rather think about space travel than war, and I'd rather think about God than anything.
Right. So. No, that's awesome. That's really awesome. You know, one of the things that I think does keep me sometimes from watching movies in my busy life with kids, and just, I mean, it's an emotionally stressful time when you've got young kids for a mother.
Sure.
You know, you just got so much going on. And movies, by their nature, jar you. I mean, they intend to. Many of them. I like dramas more than my husband laughs easily, so he loves to watch comedies and he loves to watch cartoons. But I like dramas, and I like the documentaries and things like that. But
the
sometimes
the highest ranked film on my list that I would just straight flat out recommend to you based on what you just said is The Farewell.
Okay.
It's Chinese. Part Chinese and part in English. It's the story of an American Chinese woman who is going to China because her grandmother is dying. It's not depressing.
Yeah.
the grandmother is dying, and the family hasn't told her. And so what they do is they stage, in order to explain why the whole family is gathering together from the corners of the world, they pretend that there's a wedding. So the woman has a cousin who's got a girlfriend, and they pretend for the grandmother that the two of them are getting married so that she doesn't question all of the relatives arriving. But then, you know, this grandmother, she's got a very strong personality, and it's a comedy drama. It's very funny. I think you'll enjoy it a lot. It's called The Farewell. Yeah.
Yeah. That's perfect, because what happens is when I look at the list, I'm like, okay, I know that one has a deep subject matter that's probably going to put me into thinking for hours. I'll never go to bed. And, you know, so I like monitor what I take in, because I know it'll affect my mood and my thinking.
Sure.
And so I can't wait actually for the days when I don't have that hindering my movie watching. but it's nice. I should, when I need a good movie and I don't want to be plunged into pensiveness, I should just text you and say, what should I watch? So, but anyway, good. Farewell. Then thank you, Stephen.
All right. Let me know what you think when you see it.
All right. Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Bye.
God bless.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.